Welcome back to Radio Captain U, the weekly podcast of CaptainU.com. I'm Avi Stopper, and joining me as a host this week is my brother Nate. Nate, welcome to Captain U.
Thanks. It's good to be here. I've been running around doing a lot of Captain U stuff. It's good to finally have my voice being heard by the millions.
Nate is going to co-host the show from now on. We're going to produce the show in an expanded format from this point on. So today we've got a great lineup. Actually, the theme that we're going to focus on a theme from now on, and the theme this go around is how soccer heals the world. Development through soccer is what we're focusing on. So we hope you like the show. Please send us your feedback at radio@captainu.com. So first we're going to hear from one of the players on Captain U with our audio profile. Then we'll talk to a couple guys who are really making a difference in Chicago with soccer. Then we're going to send a line out to Zambia. Yes, you heard me right. South Central Africa. To talk with Lucas Richardson of Grassroots Soccer. And then finally, we're going to end things today with our mailbag and answer a question or two about recruiting. All right, so we've got a full show. What's first, Nate?
First off, we've got our audio profile of Kevin Burke.
It turns out that Kevin was the first person to sign up for Captain U. So let's give him a call and see what's up.
Right now, I'm playing for club team Pittsburgh Storm, and I played at a lot of top tournaments like Potomac, Bethesda, Tampa Bay Sun Bowl, and Rally Shootout. And I've been playing for them for about 3.5 years.
What do you think is your best strength as a player?
I would say my best strength as a player is probably taking on defenders. And dribbling using.
What's your best soccer memory?
My freshman year of high school, we were playing one of the top teams in South Jersey, Morristown, and we were down 2-1. I received the ball about midfield and turned, and my coach told me to take on the defender. I megged him and got by him, and he wound up catching up, pulling me down. He got a yellow card, and we were given a free kick, and I took the free kick, and our senior captain headed in to tie up the game.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thank you.
So we've decided to add a little trivia to the podcast. Nate's going to ask a question at the beginning, and then at the end, I'm going to give it my best shot, and then he'll tell us what the answer is.
That's right. I actually won a Trivial Pursuit for Soccer game in an online raffle. The questions are ridiculously hard. I really don't think Avi's going to be able to get them, but we're going to toss them his way anyway, see what he does. You ready, man?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Kenny Dalglish and Herbert Chapman have won league titles with two clubs. Name a third manager to achieve this feat.
That is intensely difficult. While we play the rest of the show, I'm going to go search around on Wikipedia for the answer.
Good luck. Good luck.
Next up, we have an interview with Jim Dower and Dan Isherwood of Urban Initiatives, a nonprofit that uses soccer to reach kids in Chicago public schools. Jim and Dan are the founders of Urban Initiatives, and they've built it from the ground up to have a real presence in and around Chicago. Let's hear what they have to say.
Urban Initiatives is all about health and education, and we use soccer as a way to achieve that goal. We started about 5 years ago, a little over 5 years ago, and we worked with a series of school children from Bird Academy, which is now shuttered, and we had these kids come out and play some soccer in the morning before school as a way to kind of occupy their time, because there's a lot of downtime before school, and they don't always use that time productively. So we brought some kids out and started to kick the ball around, and next thing you know, everybody wanted to be on the team. So we kind of created a more formal organization to accompany them. And once we had them out there in the morning, we realized that a lot of them weren't getting the proper nutrition they needed before school. So we instituted our own little breakfast snack program. And we also, in order to really assist the classroom teachers, which is what our program's all about, we devised a work-to-play form. And that's where each teacher fills out a really brief response form, a weekly response form on the kids, letting us know how they're doing in the classroom and if they're achieving their academic goals.
Now, Dan, this is mostly with underserved kids on the west side of Chicago, right?
We're actually on the south side, west side, and the north side in Cabrini. We were actually teaching at Bird Academy, and through our teaching, what we realized is that the younger children in particular, the first through fourth graders, were sort of being overlooked by programming, and we just saw a natural fit for the kids' needs and sort of our background to create a team and create a health program at the same time.
On a most basic level, why is programming so desperately needed in these areas?
On the most basic level, it's needed because a lot of the kids come from homes where they either live in single-family homes or both parents work full-time. And in those situations, there's just not enough positive parental supervision in the community to really guide them as they grow up into adolescence and into adulthood. And so there's, you know, thousands of kids throughout Chicago who come home as latchkey kids. Basically, you know, they get into the door with the key around their neck, and it's kind of up to them to figure out how they're going to spend their time after school and before school and whatnot.
And how have the results been? And I mean, how do you measure the results?
Well, there's a couple of different ways we measure results. We actually just formed a partnership with the DePaul University School of Mental Health, and they're helping us kind of gauge the results in a survey fashion. Mm-hmm. Where we're learning about how the kids, whether or not they're becoming more receptive to eating healthy, whether or not they're, you know, becoming more committed to their studies, more committed to the concept of education in general as a solution. You know, is a way out, because a lot of kids in the community don't really see the ends and the points of you know, graduating from high school. In the beginning, the majority of our feedback was basically parents and teachers and community members coming to us and saying, this is amazing, like, how can we do this at our school, how can my kid get involved?
The one thing I would add, going back to the need for programs like this on the basic level, is sort of the health crisis that these kids face with regards to obesity and basically lack of movement. The Chicago Public Schools don't have recess, and they also have very limited gym or physical education classes. Most students have them once a week at the most. And with sort of the issues outside of a lot of our students' community, they don't have the ability to just go outside and run around and play. And couple that with a lack of recess and a lack of PE, there isn't a lot of time for these kids to get out and exercise, and that's contributing to the obesity crisis.
Kids inspire us to do what we do, and that kind of gives us the motivation and gives us the enthusiasm to spread that their success to others.
All right, so you started off, Dan, pretty modestly with basically, you know, the one, it sounds like the one class at the school where you were teaching. How many players are you up to now, and what are your plans for the immediate and long-term future?
Yeah. An average of about 30 participants at each school, so roughly 180 students we're serving right now. Our expansion plan works where we add two schools a year. So this this upcoming year, we're trying to add two more schools, which would roughly give us another 60 students and take us up to about 240 students served. We also are seeing a need to continue our programming upwards into grades. This upcoming fall, we're looking to do a pilot program at one of the schools with the 5th and 6th graders to see if we could get some interest at that age level to continue working with the kids we've already worked with, because we feel like we've created a great foundation, a great base to work with, and we want to continue on with those children.
Well, guys, best of luck. Dan, Jim, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you so much, Javi.
Nate, I've been tracking this organization called Grassroots Soccer for a long time, and basically what they do is AIDS education in Africa taught by top African players.
That's right. We're going to Skype right now one of our field interns, Lucas Richardson. Through the power of Skype, we're going to talk to somebody in Zambia right now. Yep. Lucas is from Colorado. He played at Dartmouth. And he's one of those lucky players who managed to turn his college career into a meaningful post-college experience.
We live in Lusaka, so it's pretty much the third world city, as best as, you know, most people would think of it. It's a pretty small place. Everyone walks on foot, and there's people all over the place, and, you know, everywhere we go, it's white people. We're asked for money, we're asked for things, which has been, it's been a difficult adjustment. It's a very warm culture and a very warm place to live, so, I mean, for us, I think we lucked out being placed in Lusaka. I mean, all the interns here have said that a number of times. I mean, it's been a great place to live and learn about life in a lot of ways.
Lusaka sounds like a really interesting place. What's the average day like there?
For me, I'm involved in a couple different soccer leagues here. So I work with a team of peer educators. They're grassroots soccer trained guys. They teach the program. They're all in high school. I get to coach them during the weekend, and on the weekends we play in a futsal league. So I'm pretty busy with those. They go into different schools and different soccer clubs, and they teach the grassroots soccer curriculum.
So, Lucas, can you shed a little light on what grassroots soccer is all about?
Grassroots soccer is based on this curriculum that we have, which is these 10 to 12 games or activities that some involve soccer, some don't, but they're all related to some aspect of HIV/AIDS prevention.
All right, what would be an example of one such game?
You have the kids line up in two lines facing each other, and behind their backs they pass a tennis ball, and they're supposed to keep it hidden. They do this, and then the facilitator tells them to stop, and they have to try to guess who has the tennis ball. And this kind of leads into a discussion about how you can't tell who has HIV/AIDS just by looking. The thing about and kind of myths about the disease, you know, that maybe you can always tell, you know, a really skinny person has HIV/AIDS when it's not the case at all. So we basically try to, through these games, try to fight these misconceptions. And then some of the other games deal with stigma, basic information on AIDS, like how it's contracted, and things like that. So as field interns, we work with, English is the first language here, but for the young kids and just most of the people in the country, it's much, much easier to learn and understand things in the local languages. So we use all local people we have probably to teach, and they teach these games. So we basically monitor them and help them, you know, improve their teaching abilities, and we keep them kind of organized.
I was reading your blog about your first days being in Zambia, you know, being called Musungu, which I take it means a white person.
Even still now, everybody, anywhere you go, people call you Musungu, but it's always kind of in jest. You know, we stick out as white people here. There aren't very many white people.
How does Grassroots promote education and, you know, motivate kids to study?
In the way that we try to partner as much as we can with other NGOs and specifically sports for development programs. By, you know, working in these leagues or working with different soccer clubs, we can kind of create a place for kids to have as an outlet. I think it's about half of all kids actually go to school. And so they don't really have a lot of different resources or outlets or places to kind of spend their time in a positive way. I mean, there's a lot of negative distractions. And I think, you know, working with soccer clubs, we get role models and people to you know, bring them together and keep them doing something positive with their lives.
You know, we always hear, you know, soccer is an international language. Is there one experience you've had there where you really connected with people through the game?
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm glad you asked that, actually. So the futsal league that we play in a place called the Italian Club. So every weekend, teams from all over the soccer come together and play in this league. And, you know, there's team of Egyptian guys, a team of Lebanese guys, a whole sort of different Zambian teams, Nigerian guys. So it's basically like this huge, I don't know, mixing pot of all these different cultures that come together. And, you know, we've all gotten so easy to talk to people. Everyone loves to talk about soccer here. And it's just kind of a great community that's been built through this club. It's owned by a couple of Italian guys who've really built it up and made it an important and popular thing here in Lusaka. And, like, I felt the impact of that probably more than anything.
Lucas, so the African Nations Cup just wrapped up, and I was curious what it was like being there during the tournament.
Whenever there's a game on, especially a Zambian game, everywhere you go, the streets were definitely less crowded, and people were just packed around bars. Everybody follows soccer here in a way that's like all the American sports combined. So, you know, everybody knows about it, and it's not something where the United States, you know, the World Cup's going on, and you know you watch with your friends who play soccer who you know like soccer. It's not like that. You know, you talk to anybody here and they know what's going on.
Despite all that enthusiasm, things didn't exactly go so well for Zambia in the tournament, eh?
They lost their second game to Cameroon 5-1. But everywhere you go, actually, one thing that was actually a bit sad about it was the local television station, ZNBC, didn't raise enough money to carry the game, so it was difficult for Zambians to watch from their homes.
On a more solemn note, Manchester United recently commemorated the 50th anniversary of the Munich air disaster. And I was curious, I couldn't help but think about the similarities with what happened with the Zambian national team in 94. So I was wondering, you know, is there just sort of like a constant within soccer circles and even the country at large, is there sort of a constant awareness of what happened back in 94 when the entire national team was lost in a plane disaster?
There is actually There was one player from the 94 team that's in the team, or a star player at least, and he started a soccer club here called the Kalusha Blaya Foundation. And through that, I think there's been a lot of respect paid to what happened. So, yeah, people are definitely aware of that. They try as best they can to use it as a positive.
All right, so how does a Dartmouth College soccer player end up in Zambia?
Tommy Clark, the founder of Grassroots Soccer, he lives in Hanover and plays pickup with us and trains with the team. And so just, you know, by getting to know him and listening to what he had to say is what really got me motivated to become a part of Grassroots Soccer. You know, the work that Tommy does and the way he talks about it was, you know, made it something that was very appealing to us. Jacob Aguiar, who I played with at Dartmouth, is here as well. You know, and just talking to him and talking to Tommy, it was really an easy decision to come down here. And, you know, it's been, I'm thankful for every minute of it.
How do you think this experience is going to, you know, is going to influence you when you get back to the U.S.?
The biggest way that this experience, you know, is going to influence me and already has is just how I was brought up in. And I know, you know, I've been lucky in my life and I've never had to deal with some of the hard things that I've seen so many different Zambian kids have to deal with. And just, you know, having seen that, you know, every day and listen to people here, I'll go back home with a, you know, how I want to live my life. And so, I mean, that's, you know, that's the impact it has. And I hope, you know, I hope every day that impact will stay and will continue to be a positive thing in my life.
Awesome. Well, Lucas, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right, Nate, so what was the trivia question again?
The question we have for all you guys who are sitting on the edges of your seat: Kenny Dalglish and Herbert Chapman have won league titles with two clubs. Name a third manager to achieve this feat.
I'm going to guess that it's Harry Redknapp.
Harry Redknapp is not correct. Brian Clough would be the correct answer. I have no idea who he is.
Actually, a very, very famous manager. He won two league championships with different teams.
I told you these questions were hard, man.
Yes, to say the least. Well, before we call it a day here, we're going to read one question from our mailbag. If you have questions that you'd like read and answered on future shows, you can email us at radio@captainu.com. Today's question comes from Danielle, a.k.a. Slick Moreau. Let's hear what she has to say.
I contacted this coach and told him that I was going to TFC Friendlies, which is in North Carolina, and he said that he was hoping to see me play, and he was really excited to see me play. And after the tournament, which my team didn't perform too well in, I didn't get a response from him right away. So I didn't know whether I should wait or whether I should send him an email and ask, like, how I did and if he saw me. I didn't know if that was okay, you know?
Right.
And also, our team had a bunch of injuries in the defense, and I normally play center mid, so I ended up playing center defense, and I didn't know if that affected it at all, because I told him I played center mid, but if he saw me, I was playing defense. So I didn't know if that would hurt me, and I didn't know if I should tell him about that or what I should do. Very
yeah.
complicated.
Okay, well, on that last point, you know, you can certainly clarify it. I don't think that he's going to think that you were, like, misrepresenting yourself in any way. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. But, you know, you can be – one of the things that coaches really like is when players are completely honest with them. And, you know, if you just say, look, this is sort of what happened in the tournament. It didn't really go as well as we wanted. You know, that will be fine.
Right.
You know, and I suspect that he'll be comfortable with that. As far as not hearing back from him immediately afterwards, that's something that I think a lot of players are really concerned about. But what you have to keep in mind is that when a coach goes to a tournament, there are a ton of kids that he's seeing play, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
there are so many players out there, and it's extremely difficult to, you know, imagine coming back after that tournament and having to kind of organize everything that you saw and all of your thoughts. The big thing, the most important thing, is to reach out and contact him afterwards. Certainly,
right.
If you know that he saw you play, you need to reach out and say, I know that you saw me play. I was there. You know, things didn't go as well as we'd hoped. I wanted to get your honest opinion. And getting his opinion, his honest opinion, while it's a tough thing to ask for, it's absolutely critical, because that sort of lays the foundation. You know, and if you think that his assessment isn't accurate, then say, I really want to have another opportunity for you to be
right.
able to see me play. So does that help?
Definitely, yeah, thank you.
All right, well, that's going to finish it up for us today here at Radio Captain U. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Nate, thanks for joining the host team. Hopefully we don't get thousands of Rotten Tomatoes thrown our way.
Hey, you know, it's been a pleasure.
Indeed. I do appreciate your commentary. Well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Radio Captain U is a production of CaptainU.com, where you can sign up, work your way through the recruiting process, whether you're a player, college coach, or a club or high school coach. Musical credit today goes out to Nelas, Menkar, and Caminos del Sonido.